The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Rock, rock, rockin' Nicole. Yeah. Rock, rock, rockin' Nicole. Rock, rock, rockin' Nicole. Oh, once she grabs, she won't let go. Rock, rock, rockin' Nicole. Rock, rock, rockin' Nicole.
None of that soft stuff.
Rock, rock.
None of that heavy metal stuff.
Rock, rock, rock and Nicole.
Just a little bit of jazz.
Rock, rock, rock and Nicole.
What do you think?
Just
I
like
love
that.
It. That was great. Thank you.
Howdy, folks. Meet you.
Somebody's laughing.
Big laughs out in the hall.
At the Peter Yarrow concert. Peter Yarrow from Peter, Paul, and Mary. It's quite life-affirming. So I got up this morning and I wrote a song that I thought was kind of in the spirit of some of the things he did. Think of all the effort Trump devotes to being a whiny, spoiled twit. Think of all the effort Trump devotes to saying stupid, hateful shit. Think of all the time Trump has devoted in attempts to just be snide.
Snide.
Think of all the time he's spent on lying to his family, his bride.
Uh-huh.
Think of all the time Trump spent in cheating while he's out on a golf course.
Yeah, he did that.
Would he put such effort into cheating on us all? Why, yes, of course.
Of course.
Think of all the money Trump has wasted just to add a bit more fat.
There's that.
Think of all the things he's done where people say, there's no excuse for that.
Mm-mm. Hell no.
Think how nice the world would be if people weren't like Trump, if they were kind to one another, focused on the greater good. We could make a paradise of any rundown dump. All we need to do is what we should.
Yeah?
Doesn't seem so hard.
No.
Think of all the effort Trump devotes to hours and hours of endless bragging. Think of all the effort he expends in trying to hide his front end sagging. Think of all the effort Trump devotes to putting makeup on his face.
Oh, yeah, orange stuff, right?
Think of all the time he wastes in thinking he's part of some master race. Think about the fact your life is done in the blinking of an eye. Do you want to waste it trying to ruin the planet? Well, neither do I. Think of all the strength that we, the good folks of this world, have as one. Let us use that strength to help ensure that in November, Trump is done.
Oh, yeah.
Make the world great again.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for listening.
Thank you. Mangy Fetlocks, everybody. Yeah, also known as Bruce W. Nelson. That's his real name. It not even related to Jeff Daniels. Believe it or not. Welcome to a Thursday show. I'm Nicole Sandler. I like to start off with these songs. Now Bruce makes it easy because he puts out one or two of them every morning. Original songs that are timely, topical, profound, usually very funny, and on... spot on. That one was a little longer than usual, a little more thoughtful. And he wrote that this morning because he forgot to do it last night. Amazing, the talent. But, you know, music, as if you didn't know, is an important part of my life. And that's why I like to start off with the creative songs and song parodies and original songs dealing with the crap that makes us crazy every day. It also, the music will come into play later on in this program. Let me give you a little bit of input onto what's coming up in the Howie Klein segment of the show. So, you know, Howie, who writes at downwithtyranny.com, has been my guest for a weekly segment. I should have done the research and gone back to see if I could find like his first appearance on the show. It's more than a dozen years, that much I know. It probably goes back about 15 years, and yeah, I've been doing this for a while. Most of my career was in music radio, but I did news talk beginning around 2004 when I moved back to Florida, maybe 2005. Because 2004 I was doing something else, but 2005-ish thereabouts, and I wound up producing for Jim DeFede, South Florida's preeminent political reporter, when he had a radio show in Miami. And then when he they didn't renew his contract and he left, it was kind of mutual, they moved me into the host position. And when I was fired, because they were going to replace me with Don Imus, go figure, in advance of a format flip from progressive talk to sports, because South Florida needed a fifth sports talk station instead of the only progressive talk station in the state. You know how that goes. Clear Channel. Thank you so much. I moved to Air America Radio, first to do fill-ins and then to do a nightly show for its final year until it went off the air. Anyway, I digress. But Howie has been doing a weekly slot on this program for many, many years. Now, I knew Howie from our previous lives. I was a music disc jockey, music director of, some really great radio stations in Los Angeles. Howie was president of Reprise Records. So that's how we met. Back in my music radio days, his music industry days. And when Howie left Reprise, of course, was the label founded by Frank Sinatra. It was Sinatra's label. Under the Warner Brothers Records heading. And again, Howie was president. When he left was when, I don't know if you remember this, but Time Warner, you know, the AOL Time Warner merger, that whole mega clusterfuck happened. And they offered people a buyout. And Howie took it. Smart move. And he just turned his considerable energies towards progressive politics. Well, in 2006, Howie, who was already blogging at downwithtyranny.com, joined forces with Digby, who you know well, because she's a regular on this program as well. Digby, of course, Digby's blog, one of the OG progressive blogs in the blogosphere. She'd been at it. She's like the grand dame of progressive blogs. So joined force with Digby and John Amato, who was a musician, and he founded crooksandliars.com. And the three of them got together and formed the Blue America Pack. And we'll get into it more when Howie and Digby join us in just a little bit. But Jackie, who is occasionally in the chat room, I don't think she's here today. She is their sort of, business person. She deals with all the business end of things. And she's been with them since the beginning as well, I believe. Again, I wasn't part of it from the beginning, although I sort of was because Howie had been on so often. But and I would definitely, promote them when they had campaigns going. And that's the thing. They would do these campaigns. So we're going to focus in on one of their early campaigns. I've got a video and a song to play for you. You'll notice if you read the description of today's show, you'll see that we have both Digby coming up along with Howie and Tom Maxwell. Tom Maxwell wrote the song for one of their first campaigns that really launched Blue America. And it was called, I don't have the name. We'll get to it. But anyway, the name Tom Maxwell might not be familiar to you. However, you've probably heard his music. Tom Maxwell was in a band called Squirrel Nut Zippers. And they had a big hit, a song called Hell. I can't play it because, you know, I'd get copyright violated. But he came up with an original song. He was joined on vocals by Ricky Lee Jones. And the version we're going to play, the one that was originally released by Blue America, that was made into a video by another person. They put it out there and said, anybody who wants to, you know, take it and make a video, go for it. And someone did. This campaign was to oust Denny Hastert. Who remembers Denny Hastert? Show of hands. Come on. Come on. Denny Hastert was Speaker of the House, Republican, really horrible man. We did not know it at the time, but he was a child. He was a pedophile. He was a child sexual predator. We learned after the fact. I think he was the longest running Republican Speaker of the House in U.S. history. I could be wrong there, but that's what's popping into my mind. And so you go back in history and you think we've hit rock bottom. Well, we've been there before. You know, you look at some of these Republicans who've come through. Denny Hastert, oh my God, that we learned that he was a child sexual predator after he had already been, you know, drummed out of the House. Amazing. Anyway, we're gonna sort of, you know, refresh your memory and in some cases introduce you to the Blue America Pack with Digby and Howie Klein and Tom Maxwell. And yeah, and hopefully turn a focus on some of the candidates that are endorsed in this election year, 2024, which we know is the most important election of our lifetime. Now, I know I feel like a broken record because I've said that. I've said this is the most important election in our lifetimes, probably for each of the last half a dozen presidential elections. Maybe that's an exaggeration, but maybe not. Because each has been, and none of them approach the magnitude of the importance of this here one, this 2024 election year. And every day it gets more and more maddening because the stakes are so high. So we'll get into all that in a few minutes. Howie and Digby and Tom will join us and we'll go down that memory path. But I want to start with a different memory path today because, I wake up in the morning, play with Jackson, take him for a walk. When I sit down in the studio, I get in front of the computer and I start reading the news. Actually, I look at the phone before that. The first story that I saw today was the news that O.J. Simpson had died. Can't say that I'm sorry. Look, I remember, I'm old enough to remember when O.J. Simpson wasn't, a punchline, wasn't a murderer. He was this great football player. My dad was a big football fan. Well, my dad liked to bet on football. I don't know that fan is the right word, but he was enmeshed in football because he was a gambler. And I remember the first time, maybe not the first time, but when I was a kid, hearing O.J. Simpson, and I remember my dad telling me, yeah, his nickname, they call him O.J., and I don't know, I just remember him talking about him, and I remember the commercials of O.J. running through the airport for Hertz rental car or something like that. Anyway, my, how the mighty fall. So, I was living in Los Angeles back in 1994. 1994 was when OJ's ex-wife, Nicole Brown Simpson, was brutally murdered outside her townhouse in Brentwood. Well, I lived not far from where she lived and was murdered. I lived there for a very short time. I shared an apartment in Brentwood, again, just a few blocks away, with a friend of mine before I moved out. Yeah. And so, you know, there was this weird proximity, right? And we were all caught up. Now, I know the whole country, the whole world was, you know, enmeshed in that, was captivated by what happened. It was kind of apparent that O.J. did it. But my biggest memory from the whole O.J. Simpson mess came on June 17th, 1994. We're coming up on the 30th anniversary. My goodness, how time flies. 30 years. And it was a Friday night. It was the day of the slow speed chase. Now, it's amazing. I talk to people and, you know, like my daughter wasn't even born yet. And this was like the biggest news story in the world. There was, of course, the trial with the dancing Itos and the circus surrounding it, right? But O.J. Simpson, I guess, was in the back. My memory is foggy. It is 30 years ago, after all. But he was in the back of his white Bronco, driven by a friend of his. They were going down the 405 freeway slowly enough that, you know, the helicopter chase, everything was on TV. Well, that night, there was the Melissa Etheridge concert at the Greek Theater that I went to. And being that, you know, I worked in radio, there was the Greek Theater is one of the best places, bar none, to see a concert. And because being LA, there's a big, you know, backstage hang. Now, it's not really backstage because it's not in the stage. It's like a green room area where they have, a whole reception area with food and drink and people hang out and talk. And so I think there was an opening act who none of us were out there for because we were all in that, what we called the backstage area, watching the slow speed chase on the TV. And it kept going and going and going. And finally, they start flickering the lights in this green room, in this backstage area, and nobody's leaving. And finally, they had to come in and turn off the TV and say, Melissa is going on stage. You all have to get out in front of house and go watch the show. So we did. And from the stage, Melissa Etheridge finally announced when the slow speed chase ended. And I don't even remember exactly how, it was probably a big letdown when it ended. But that's my memory. I went to see Melissa Etheridge that night and all the LA, you know, people were hanging out watching the chase instead of going out into the audience. There were other things. When you live in proximity, it's weird. You know, I told you the story of my friend Angela McCluskey, who died just a couple of weeks ago. She was a singer in a band called Wild Colonials, and it did more than that as well. But she, the radio station that I worked at when I met her, went on the air just a few weeks later. It hit the air in the beginning of July of 1994. And Wild Colonials was one of our first bands that we embraced, a new band that we broke. And Angela and I became good friends. And Geffen Records, who she recorded for, made her go to a gym and work out because, you know, she didn't fit their image of the svelte, you know, front singer of a new band. And we worked out. I happened to be going to this gym in Brentwood, which was right next door to the restaurant where Ron Goldman worked, where Nicole Brown left her keys or glasses or whatever it was that he went and delivered back to her. And he was there when they were killed. It's so weird when your own personal story sort of sideswipes a major news event and it's like a part of the thread of your life. Weird memories. And as we get older, these weird memories come back. So I remember Angela and I working out at that gym and, you know, making fun of all the stars that would work out there as well. But the restaurant where Ron Goldman worked had the best pizza. It was a cheeseless pizza. It was vegetables. It was healthy. The trainer even said, you know, you guys can eat it. It was good. But those are the memories that come back to me. And when I read today that O.J. Simpson had died at the age of 76, cancer, I had nothing but weird memories. And, you know, I guess as you get older, you look back on shit that happens in your life and try to make sense of it. And I can't always. Anyway, that's what happened here. So goodbye, OJ. Then there was the other thing. Nicole Brown. All right, I'm not enough. Weird memories are flooding back. And I guess that's what happens. All right. So that's the first news item on my rundown today. There is an interesting postscript to this ongoing story here in Arizona. And it's not only in Arizona, it's around the country where old laws are coming back to get us, right? And here in Arizona, you heard the news. We dealt with it the last 2 days. The Arizona Supreme Court reenacted an old 1864 law that bans abortion entirely. It is the strictest abortion law in the country. It has only an exception for the life of the mother, and that is it. No rape, no incest. And now we're learning a little bit more. Why? So, you know, on Mondays, Jonathan Larson, the guy behind The Fucking News at thefuckingnews.substack.com, is here. Well, this morning's Fucking News newsletter has this interesting tidbit about the man who put that ban into law in 1864. The more you know. In 1864, the Arizona State House Speaker was a guy named William Claude Jones. Now, just know, Arizona was not then a state. It was not a state yet. It was a territory, but still had a speaker. I think William Claude Jones and Denny Hastert probably would have been friends. Although Denny Hastert liked little boys, William Claude Jones liked little girls. Yeah, so William Claude Jones, before he put this law into effect, married a 12-year-old named Maria V. Del Refugio. He resigned as a U.S. attorney in New Mexico after he was accused of abducting his 12-year-old bride. Not sure what happened then, but then he married, he moved up a couple of years. He married Caroline Stevens, who was 15. And with his 15-year-old bride, he somehow met and impregnated a 14-year-old named Maymay Calahayo. Again, I'm reading this from Jonathan Larson's fucking newsletter from this morning. And it says, and that's just some of what we know. Two of the judges so fond of child raper Jones' legislative legacy, now he's cut ahead to the current crop of Arizona Supreme Court justices. Two of these judges on Arizona Supreme Court, who apparently are fond of this child raper Jones, are both up and ready to be voted out off the bench in November. Their names are Clint Bolick and Catherine Hackett King, Jonathan writes, both of whose names sound like they're also from 1864, are up for what's known as retention. They're both appointees of the previous governor, Doug Ducey. So, you know what? Yeah, so we can get rid of them, but kind of too little too late, don't you think? But anyway, Jonathan Larson wasn't the only one who wrote about this Jones guy. In today's Washington Post, there's a column by a woman named Monica Hess. And the headline reads, "Meet the, quote, pursuer of nubile young females who helped pass Arizona's 1864 abortion law." And this story is It's wild. It says Jones was a prevaricator, a poet, a politician, and the pursuer of nubile young females. This according to a 1990 article published in the Journal of Arizona History, which appears to be the most comprehensive biological report published on the life of this 19th century idiot. His pursuit of such nubility, she writes, began with a marriage to Sarah Freeman, who bore him two children in the 1840s when Jones would have been in his early 20s or 30s. He was a sitting member of the Missouri State Legislature at the time. Boy, he moved around a lot. But his family followed him to Arkansas and then Texas as he searched for more prominent government appointments. In 1854, President Franklin Pierce eventually named him U.S. Attorney for the New Mexico Territory. And it was about then that Jones' first wife filed for divorce. His next wife was the girl believed to be Maria V. Del Refugio. That was the 12-year-old, writes Boyd Finch, the author of the journal article. New Mexico's delegate to Washington, Miguel Otero, was bothered by the union. He, quote, declared that the bride was 12 years old, Finch writes, and that Jones had abducted her. Otero petitioned President James Buchanan to fire Jones for the moral failing, but Jones resigned instead. No matter. The mid-19th century was, by any standard you or I would recognize, a hideous place for women. The predatory relationship did not end Jones's political career. He merely moved farther west to the Arizona Territory. There, Jones supported secession from the southern states in the impending Civil War. He also landed his third wife, Caroline Stevens, who was 15 years old. Claude, by this time, was around 50. They were married on for about a year because in 1865, Finch writes, Jones left Caroline. She never saw or heard from him again. He had boarded a train for California, then a boat for Hawaii, where he again entered local politics, winning a seat in the kingdom's lower house. By 1868, a local girl named Maymay Kalaheo, reportedly a princess from a noble family, was pregnant with his child. She was 14. They got married, had several children together until she died at the age of 28 in 1881. Then Jones wed for a fifth time, age unknown, Mary Aquina, only to file for divorce 2 years later. Wow. Just incredible. And so there's this whole thing about him. But while Jones lived in Arizona, he was elected to represent Tucson in the Territorial Legislative Assembly. And then when that legislature convened in 1864, he was elected Speaker of the House. And it was that legislature, the one that Jones presided over in 1864, after he had already abandoned his first wife and married a 12-year-old and was just weeks away from marrying a 15-year-old, though still a few years away from marrying a 14-year-old, it was that legislature that passed a law reading, quote, every person who shall administer or cause to be administered or taken any medicinal substances or shall use or cause to be used any instruments, whatever, with the intention to procure the miscarriage of any woman then being with child and shall be thereof duly convicted, shall be punished by imprisonment in the territorial prison for a term not less than 2 years, nor more than 5 years. And it was that piece of legislation that, on Tuesday, was reinstated as the law of the land in Arizona. Are you fucking kidding me? It represents a near total ban on abortion in the state. The state Supreme Court voted 4-2 that the 160-year-old law put into place nearly five decades before Arizona was a state should supersede the previous rule, which guarded the right to an abortion up to 15 weeks gestation. The new, and this columnist writes, and by new, I mean very old, law is scheduled to go into effect in 2 weeks' time. William Claude Jones sauntered into the wide expanse of a southwestern territory more than 150 years ago, and this man's morals are now the benchmark for the reproductive rights of the 7 million people who live in Arizona. Good night. And that's how Monica Hess ends this opinion piece for the Washington Post. Just one last thing. I need to show you this guy's picture. Where is that? Oh, I lost it here. Hold on one second. Let me get it up on the screen. Because maybe it's just me, but I think, hold on, I got to do this. I think it looks like Paul Manafort. Tell me if I'm right. Hold on. Here you go. Doesn't that look like, it's a drawing, it's a sketch, but doesn't that look like Paul Manafort? It reminds me of him. All right, enough of that. Let's move on to the business at hand today. Wow. And you know, we got to get in the right mood. Whose turn is it to mix up the Dirty Debbies?
Are you a multinational corporation hungry for a treat? Well, come on down to Schmucky Chucky's, where you'll personally be seated by Chuck Schumer himself.
So many dishes, and they're all fresh.
You're going to love our Blue Dog special, the Dino Burger, because we say so.
A good hamburger and French fries.
And every burger comes with a side order of...
grits. I love grits. I love anything with corn. It's corn.
All for only $50,000. Wash it all down with a Dirty Debbie.
9/10 water, 1/10 oranges. After a week or two, you drink this, it's 200 calories and it's acetic.
And wipe your mouth with a tissue print of Glass-Steagall. For dessert, try our DNC tarts.
Little cookies, tell the quality of that.
Most restaurants give you a mint, but at Schmucky Chucky's, you get complimentary.
Sweet and low.
Who picks up the tab for all this? Find out now with Howie Klein of DownWithTyranny.com on The Nicole Sandler Show.
Oh, okay. Hey, Howie Klein.
Hi. And today we're not just Howie Klein. We're a whole bunch of people, I understand.
We are, but we're not there yet because you guys, I thought we were all going to, oh, shoot. Hold on. We got no audio. Hold on. I got to fix the audio. There we go. Okay. So, yes, Howie's here. Sorry about that audio glitch. When we have so many people on at the same time, you know, I have to get the tech together. And I thought we were going to all do it on Zoom. And nobody wanted to be on camera. So I figured I'd get you up first. And then I will call Digby and Tom. So I thought we'd say hi first while I attempt to add people to this phone call. This should be tricky. So we'll do that. So while I get first person I'm going to call is Digby, if I can figure this out. Yeah, you know, I'm not having an easy time in this. But anyway, hi, Howie. How are you doing?
I'm good, and I'm willing to tap dance while you get all the tech stuff together.
Okay, cool. Now, I'm dialing Digby now, and then hopefully she'll answer, and then hopefully, Howie, you're still there, right? I hope I didn't hang up on Howie.
Hello.
Hey, Digby, it's Nicole. I think I just hung up on Howie.
Oh no.
Yeah, you know, let's see if I, oh no, he was on hold.
I can't
tell. There you are. Howie, you're here. Howie and Digby are both here. Digby, say hi. Digby was here a second ago. So now Howie's here. So I have one on hold and then the other one, how do I get you both up here together? Digby, you're there now, right?
I'm here now, yes.
So what happened was I unheld you, add participants. Ah, okay. Howie, we want Digby. See, I knew I was asking for trouble here. I should have just had you all.
I'm here.
I know, you're here. Okay. Now, I think I'm calling Howie again. I hope he hangs up and then picks up. Anyway, so Digby. Hi, Digby. Digby, of course, everybody knows from Digby's blog.net, Digby's Hullabaloo.
Hello?
Howie. Okay, you're back. Digby's here.
Oh, I didn't realize that I was gone. I was talking and explaining what we're doing and everything, and no one heard me.
No, now you're back. So I got Digby and I got Howie. Let's just start with us, and then I'm going to get Tom Maxwell on the line as well. We'll do that in just a moment. But you two are two of the original three, right? Was it just the original three who founded the Blue America Pack?
Well, John Amato was the other one.
Yes.
And apparently someone forgot to invite him today.
Jackie produced it.
Jackie.
So Jackie could have invited John. I think John doesn't really like me. You know, I can rub people the wrong way. And years ago, I disagreed with his choice of an editor for Crooks and Liars, and I told him what I thought of her. And John and I haven't really spoken since. He got very mad at me. So maybe he didn't want
it.
Caroly. I'm not a Caroly fan.
Oh, I love Caroly.
Yeah,
well, even though we disagree a lot on a lot of things.
Yeah, it's okay to disagree.
You know what? The things that I disagree with her about are the things that you and I disagree about.
Oh, really? So she and I agree?
On everything.
Wow, interesting. Maybe she did something really shitty years ago that I'm not going to rehash, but maybe it's time we bury the hatchet. Anyway, if Jackie invited John Amato or not, I wouldn't doubt that she did, and he said, "Nah, I'll let you guys handle this." I wouldn't doubt it.
No, he would have come on.
Really? So the three of you, back in 2006, how did you all come together to do this?
Well, we were all bloggers. And, right? What was it called before it was blogging, Digby? Do you remember?
Well, no. War blogging? I don't know.
Before it was blogging,
it was some other thing where there would be... These closed lists, and you could put your opinion in the list or something. They had a name, but I can't remember it.
Yeah, there were forums, and I think we were all on different forums for a while before blogging really took off. I was on one. Maybe you guys will remember this since we're taking a little trip down memory lane here today. Do you remember Bart Cop?
Yeah, sure. Oh, another blog, right?
Yeah, that's where I sort of met a whole lot of people, including Atreus and, various others who went on to become bloggers. And that's kind of where, I had been on other forums, too, before that. I mean, going all the way back, to CompuServe and things like that back in the 90s.
Yes, that's what I was thinking about, CompuServe.
And the AOL chat rooms, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I think what happened was is that the three of us, Howie, John, and I, first of all, we're all from LA. Mm-hmm. So that made, one sort of connection. And we were able to meet in person.
And have dinner.
Which was we had dinner and we kind of got to know each other personally. And of course, we were on the same wavelength and part of that big, huge blogging wave that happened in the early 2000s and sort of culminated in a whole lot of activity around the 2004 election and then in 2000, leading up to 2006. And so it just was kind of a natural thing for us to kind of think about ways, because it became clear during those early days that this, you could actually organize online and you could, they called us the Netroots, right? That was sort of what we were. And it was a corollary to grassroots. And the idea was that we could organize online, we could raise money for progressives. And we were at the time, very, oppositional to the Democratic establishment, and we're trying to boost progressive candidates because we really felt that it was necessary to change the Democratic Party after, seeing what we'd seen in reaction to George Bush and the Iraq War and everything that was going on then, and just feeling like the Democrats had really let us down. So we realized that we could do some organizing online, and that's really where it started, over dinner. I'm pretty sure we were eating dinner at some fabulous LA restaurant and went, hey.
And it worked. We started off by actually beating the DCCC and the DSCC. They had their sort of conservative Democratic candidates. And it wasn't just Blue America, but as Digby said, there was this whole Netroots thing. And we all got together and we got up behind more progressive candidates. And we beat them. They didn't really understand online organizing at the time. They failed. And Rahm Emanuel was completely freaked out. Chuck Schumer, who at the time was the head of the DSCC, was freaked out. They couldn't understand how we could raise money.
And they were very, very upset because they had the monopoly on money until this. Then we came along and we're suddenly raising lots and lots of money for candidates who were able to compete. So, for example, Rahm Emanuel had some lug that he was running in up in California, and we got behind this guy named McNerney. What was his first name again? Oh, Jerry McNerney.
Jay,
that's right.
Jay McNerney.
Yeah, and then in Montana, we got behind a populist named John Testa, who's still in the Senate.
Sure.
And Schumer had some other candidate, some like financial guy, Wall Street kind of character. And we won. And I'm just bringing those two up, but we won in a whole slew of races like that. In the end, Schumer and Rahm were able to outwit us because once they got their hands on these guys, they turned them towards the center and away from progressivism. And that's, you know, that's where it's at now.
Okay, so I think we have Tom Maxwell on the line now. I brought him up in a different phone, so hopefully this works. Tom, are you there?
I'm here, and yes, and loving it. Thanks for having me.
Oh, good. So, Howie.
Thanks for coming.
Sure. So, Howie, would you like to introduce Tom and explain his participation in the beginnings of Blue America?
Well, I think Jackie should.
Jackie's not here. I asked her. She's going to join us, and she said, "No, your little studio is getting really crowded. I'll just leave it to the big names."
Jackie
just threw a bomb and left us.
Well, then I'll do it
anyway,
if you want. Or
so we met Tom because he was a member of the Squirrel Nut Zippers.
Yeah.
And Tom, I don't recall if we solicited you or you volunteered, but somehow you did this incredible song that we use for a kind of campaign theme song in which election was that? Who remembers? It was 2010?
I think this was 2006. And I think it was when, to oust Denny Hastert. Now, who can forget Denny Hastert? We didn't know it at the time, but he was a damn pedophile. He was stripping
little
boys.
Knew it at the time, and some of us were writing about it at the time. Right there in real time, we were interviewing kids, interviewing people who had real life experience with his pederasty. Even I interviewed someone at a hotel who told me that when his wife came to town, she didn't stay with him in his apartment. She stayed in a hotel, and he had young fellows in the how did it happen that we came together with you, Tom?
Howie, I volunteered because I'm not an idiot. I had discovered Fire Dog Lake and Air America, and then I was reading Digby, and still to this day, and a true and deep admirer, and tip my hat and blow kisses in your direction. And then I saw, Howie Klein. Okay, I don't know what a legend. I mean, I was in the music industry and we kind of kicked around a little bit with those boys in Wilco.
Huh?
And here's Howie Klein. And I'm like, I want to do something. I don't know what to do. And if memory serves, which it usually doesn't, I think I wrote you, Howie, or somebody, and said, is there anything I can do? Is there something I can do to help? And you said, yeah, you can write a song. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I can do that, actually. So that's how that ball got kicked off. And Howie was just on it instantly.
Well, I have the song, and we're going to play it. Now, there's a video that went along with it, and this was one of the early Blue America campaigns.
Before you play it, I just want to say, I think the video maybe came first. I'm not 100% sure. And you'll hear a voice on there that should be familiar to a lot of our listeners, and that's Ricky Lee Jones, who was not a member of the Squirrel Nut Zippers, but we managed to get Ricky Lee together with Tom and his partner, and a producer named Andy Paley.
Yes. The song is called Have You Had Enough? And I'll play it now. And then afterwards, Jackie did a write-up. It's on the Blue America blog at Crooks and Liars. I will link to it. It's actually in the YouTube description of today's show. There's a link to Jackie's piece. It's the URL was too long to put up on the Chiron here, but I will also link to it from the blog where I post the show, and I'll share that with you after the song. But let's listen to the song and see the video that was actually created by somebody else. And here's how it goes.
had enough
of hypocrisy?
Have you had enough
of the spending spree?
Have you had enough? Does it make you want to scream and shout?
Yes, it does. Yes, it does.
Have you had enough
of the rubber stamps?
Have you had enough
of the wiretaps?
If you've had enough, then let's throw Danny Hastert out.
You know we've let them take the test too long. They've gotten all the answers wrong. No plan, no shade, no oversight.
Now's the time to put it right. Have you had enough?
Cause they're all corrupt.
Have you had enough?
Or be a divvied
up. If you've had enough, then let's throw Danny Hastert out.
We'll do it, try it, and spread the word. It's time to make our voices heard.
And it ends, it says, elect John Lesch, L-A-E-S-C-H.
Who's now an alderman in Rockford, Illinois, the second biggest city in the state.
Oh, wow.
You know what? And John put the ball in motion for getting rid of Denny Hastert. He didn't beat him that cycle, but that was the start. And Denny Hastert, of course, wasn't just a pederast. He was also the Speaker of the House.
That's right. Wasn't he like the longest running Republican Speaker of the House in history, I think? I think that's one of the weird factoids that just swim in my brain. What Jackie wrote was, one of her earliest campaigns was a big hit, the Have You Had Enough song from the mind of musical director, creator Tom Maxwell and vocalist Ricky Lee Jones, was heralded as one of the very first Netroots video efforts to penetrate mainstream media. More importantly, the corresponding video campaign was made available for our progressive candidates to use for their own local campaigns, thanks to Mike McEntee, who created the video and did all the editing for us.
That's right. And we wound up, we had about 20, it could be 18 or 22, but we had about 20 candidates who used it. Many of them won their first elections. And some of them are in the Senate now. I mean, it was the first election for example, I'm embarrassed to say, but Kirsten Gillibrand, first election for Connecticut Senator Chris Murphy. They were running for the House back then. That's how long ago this was. And we got it on the radio in that area. So, you know, where the upper New York, eastern part of the state meets western Connecticut, it was actually being played as a regular song on radio stations.
Wow.
And so they would hear the full version that that Tom did. So not just the little 30-second or 1 minute video version, but they would hear the whole song. And then they would, and then later on, you know, we would buy advertising on those stations for the candidate. So the whole song didn't mention the candidate's name. It was just about having had enough. We would come on with the ads, and that we wound up electing an immense number of people, some of whom are still in Congress. Some of them aren't, but some of them are still.
It's pretty amazing, and you've been going strong ever since. So, Tom, are you still?
It also, just to add just one little thing to that,
yeah.
It also got the attention of the mainstream media. And I remember on MSNBC and CNN that they did spots on this, which kind of gave it some national attention and gave Blue America national attention and the candidates national attention. Because, you know, in those days, this whole blog thing was just kind of interesting to those people, and they didn't quite know what to make of it in the mainstream media. And so this ad was, I think it was the first to be sort of professionalized in this way, you know, with actual professional musicians like Tom and people like Howie sort of putting together something like this. And it was it was catchy, and it really did garner quite a bit of attention all over the country.
Wow.
And then immediately that made blogging legitimate, and then they hired Rachel Maddow and Chris Hayes.
Chris Hayes came
wow,
later.
Wow, gee whiz.
Yeah. So and that all, that, you know, Air America was in there too somewhere. Air America was like 2003 to whenever it went away. And then Rachel came from Air America. Chris Hayes came from The Nation. So, but it was all in that time period that all this happened. So, Tom,
A blogger before he went to The Nation. He was a blogger first, and then to The Nation.
Probably. I don't know Chris Hayes pre The Nation.
You do, Digby, right?
Yeah, I knew him. I mean, he was writing for In These Times and doing various things. And, you know, he was part of our ecosystem. Let's just put it that way.
Got it.
Okay.
I mean, I felt
that way about Rachel as well. I guess I don't know necessarily that she had a blog per se, but I used to always feel like, you know, very, very good, because I would write something and then the next day she'd be talking about it on the radio and I felt great, even though she never acknowledged it. It didn't matter.
Right.
And that was, for me, that was a kind of a part of what blogging was, you know, you just wanted to get the word out. You didn't really need to be personally acknowledged.
Right.
It's at least the way I always felt.
So, Howie, when you left Warner Brothers and you were done with the music industry, you immediately pivoted to progressive politics and started Down with Tyranny?
Yes. I had been involved with progressive politics for my entire life.
Right.
I mean, from the time I could walk and talk. So, and while I was at Warner Brothers, I was involved with progressive politics as well. But I remember my very, very first day, like literally my first day that I wasn't working at Warner Brothers, I slept in a little bit, not too much, but I didn't jump out of bed at like 6 a.m. like
right.
I did when I worked at Warner Brothers. And I guess I put the radio on and there was a report on the radio saying that there was this new thing that had just started called the Huffington Post. And I ran downstairs and opened up my computer and I saw the Huffington Post first day. And then I called Ariana and I asked her if she was interested in me writing. And she was very, very interested. And I did write something. And then she said she'd like me to write on a regular basis for them. And I was really excited until I realized what she wanted me to write was about music. And I didn't want to write about music anymore. I wanted to write about politics. And she said, we have enough people writing about politics already.
So you had to find your own place to write.
Right. It was funny because I started writing Down with Tyranny that day. So the same day, literally, that HuffPost started, I also started Down with Tyranny. But I didn't understand blogging at all. Someone had to show me. Like, I didn't know how to connect with anybody. I didn't even know how to do a URL. I didn't know anything.
Right.
So I don't know, for several months I was just writing and no one could have possibly read anything I wrote except myself.
Well, so now these
Good
days
practice.
You are writing a memoir of music stuff, and we need to mention Tom Maxwell. Just congratulations, Tom. 2 days ago, your book hit stores, A Really Strange and Wonderful Time, The Chapel Hill Music Scene, 1989 to 1999. So
thank you.
Brand new book. I'm excited to, you know, back in when I first met Howie, I was working at a station in L.A., KSCA, and Ben Folds 5 was one of our, we played you. Hell was, of course, a huge hit. But Ben Folds 5 and others from that area, big music scene down there.
It was wonderful. And I know all those guys. So, you know, it was KROQ that I guess put us on the map
shot
us out of a cannon or whatever you want to say. And so, yeah, and so they're all in there, the guys from Ben Folds 5, but also the sort of indie rock guys like Archers of Loaf and Polvo and Superchunk. And it all happened in this relatively small college town in North Carolina. And I just feel like unless you were there, you may not know about it. And I think it's something very much worth writing about. I had a great time writing it, and I'm delighted that you have it and that there's some interest in it. I guess people, you know how the sort of business is where it will divvy you up and put you in a little box. Well, you're indie rock and you're swing revival and you're, I don't know what you are, but the fact is that we were all kicking around the same, you know, 6-block radius and hanging out with each other and gigging together. And there's a, what I wanted to do with this book was really just, you know, sure, make a chronological retrospective of some really terrific music. But what I was really wanting to do is have it be a sort of a proof of concept of the genius of community, which I think is something that is lost. And it's something that you may have heard this term, Howie Brian Eno calls it a scenius. which is a homely but a very descriptive term, genius. It's like the combination of genius and genius. He first came upon it when he was studying Russian paintings and saw an exhibition at the Barbican of a bunch of people he wasn't familiar with, and it kind of struck him that that they're sort of nurturing and reinforcing communities of artists. Oh. And that's what I'm writing about too.
Very cool.
There were scenes all over the country. So when like from my perspective, when one of the 415 bands would go to play, they would, you know, do a swing that included Athens, Georgia.
Sure.
Which, you know, what the hell is that? If you weren't from Georgia, you didn't know.
But B-52s and R.E.M. and Indigo Girls are all from that area.
Exactly so. Yeah. Exactly so. Yeah, R.E.M. was instrumental, I think, in putting Chapel Hill on the map as a touring spot for bands going up and down the Eastern Seaboard. And we all admired them a lot because they were the first significant Southern band for us who weren't, you know, Molly Hatchet or Lynyrd Skynyrd.
Right.
So
Howie, of course, one of the things we connected over music because our friendship predated my involvement in politics. I was all music back then. But with Blue America, one of the things that I connected with you on was the music element. You would do fundraisers because after all your years in the music industry, you had all these gold record awards and other really cool memorabilia that you used from your own personal collection to help try to raise funds for progressive candidates.
Yes, still doing it.
Still
in fact, a state senator from Wisconsin was at my house a couple of nights ago. We had dinner, and then he came over here and he saw a what was the name of that band again? Who Let the Dogs Out?
Oh shoot.
And we all know who you're talking about.
Yeah. All right.
So it was just sitting on the floor. The platinum record was sitting on the floor and it was like, he happened to have loved that song or he and his wife both loved that song. So he was just looking at it and he looked like he wanted it so badly. So I said, oh, you can have it. And he's going to take it home and make a fundraiser out of it.
The Bahaman. Bahaman. Thank you.
You're going to give this
Thank
away?
You.
No,
Chat
I'm
room.
Not going to give it away. I'll just let people come. The winner can come over and touch it.
Jay Colley in the chat room. Bahaman. That's
yes.
Awesome. Yes.
Bahaman. That was it.
Yep.
Thank you.
You got it. Before we run out of time, real quick, because we are talking about the Blue America Pack, I want to show, for those of you watching on YouTube, one way to get there. There are many ways to get to Blue America, but if you go to downwithtyranny.com, I'm showing the homepage here. In the upper right-hand corner, it says About, and then you can see Blue America Pack. So if you click on that, it brings you to Blue America. And you can scroll down. By the way, Howie, you got a typo in here. It's not a typo. It's a mistake. The address for Digby's blog is not hullabaloo.com. It's digbysblog.net. So you need to fix that. But then if you go down here on the left, there's you can see these are the Blue America endorsed candidates. And you've got House, Senate, incumbents, and state legislatures. So let's look at like the candidates for House, and you can make a contribution here and you can split it between, it says your contribution will be split evenly between Jared Christian, who's been on the show, Sushila Jayapal, who's Pramila's sister, Jamie McLeod Skinner, who I'm glad is running again, Diane Young, who I don't know about, Howie, and the Blue America Pack. Tell us about Diane Young.
Oh, Diane Young is fantastic. She's running in a district, a suburban district just north of Detroit, and she's a fantastic candidate running against John James, a kind of like a Trump lackey. It's a district that's been trending blue. So, in other words, all of the recent Democratic candidates who have run have won that district.
Ah.
So there's a very, very good chance she's going to win and replace this kind of awful MAGA guy.
Good. I hope so. So, you know, take your time. You can peruse the website and all the candidates that are have been endorsed by Blue America. So are we done for the season, like for this election year? This is
No, it's started. We're not done at all.
Okay, so you're still vetting candidates. So those are the House candidates so far. Senate, you've got on the list Alan Grayson, Lucas Kuntz in Missouri, who should have won last time, came very close, and let's see, Zach Shrewsbury and Blue America PAC. And then you've got incumbents and you've got state legislatures.
Show as well.
Zach was on the show as well from West Virginia. Yep. So tell us about how you decide who Blue America is going to endorse.
So we're looking for progressive candidates. That's first and foremost. They have to be good on progressive issues. And then we're also looking for people who have some chance to win. So in other words, we're not trying to make a bet saying, yes, they're going to win. It's not about that. But they have to have at least like some reasonable chance that they can win, maybe because they're going to outwork the other candidate. I mean, someone like Shrewsbury, for example, the major media will never acknowledge that he's even running because they say, you know, West Virginia is so red that that there's no chance for a Democrat in that state. But the fact of the matter is this guy has been doing it, you know, for now over a year, like almost 2 years, and he's working so hard and he's in, you know, one small hamlet a day and getting to know everybody who lives there. So, you know, I'm not predicting that he's going to win. That's not what Blue America is about. But we want to support he's putting so much effort into it that we want to support that effort.
Good.
And if people want to donate to him, great. We don't tell people, yes, he's going to win, donate to him. That's not not the way Blue America does it.
Right. And sometimes
but he deserves support.
You've backed
just, you know, say, yeah, I'm going to run and just their names on the ballot. And
right.
It's kind of, you know, one step away from a vanity campaign.
Yep, yep.
We don't, no matter what their issues are, we don't get behind candidates like that.
Right. But Blue America has also been behind candidates who didn't win their first time, came back again and won the second time. Right. I think Donna Edwards, wasn't she one of those?
Yeah, Donna was one. There were a lot. Alan
yes.
Grayson was another one. There were a whole lot of candidates like that. I mean, a lot of time. And then we had just talked about John Leash. His first campaign, I mean, this guy is a union carpenter. So he all day long, he'd be like, you know, nailing wood. And then he'd go out and talk to groups all through his district. And he was running against the Speaker of the House. And like I said, now he is the alderman at large. He's the alderman at large in the second biggest city in Illinois, unless he just got elected mayor. I'm not sure. I can't remember. But yeah, so sometimes people get started.
Go ahead, Diggy. Yeah.
Okay. I just wanted to do a little bit of a 30,000 foot thing here. And before we go and just sort of say that, you know, a lot of this is about building progressivism. The whole point of it was not necessarily to win the first time. And as you just said, sometimes it takes two times, three times. And part of the effect of that, of having people out there kind of making the case for progressive ideas, that just starts to permeate first the party, which is one of the big, we wanted to be able to influence the Democratic Party. And then, of course, the community, and then, you know, the party writ large in the whole country. And I, you know, I have to say, and it wasn't just us, there were lots of groups doing this kind of thing, but I think it did work. If you look at the Democratic Party today compared to where it was 20 years ago, when we were just starting doing this stuff, it's different. It is much more progressive than it used to be. There is a much greater, there's still tons of work to be done, of course. And there's that battle between the, you know, sort of the more conservative and progressive within the party will always go on. There's a healthy tension there. But I do think that it's had a tremendous effect. If you look at the leadership of the Democratic Party, you look at even, you know, Biden's administration
yes.
and many of the things I don't think any of us here expected to see from him. This kind of thing has had an effect, and it's long, slow, kind of, you know, grinding work to sort of do this day in and day out. And, you know, when it comes to Blue America, I just have to say to everybody listening, there's only one real person in Blue America that does all the big thinking work on this stuff, and that's how.
And that's Jackie.
And his assistant,
that's Jackie.
Well, now I was just going to say his assistant, Jackie, does all the actual logistical
right.
work for this. You know, John and I we're just sort of figureheads. We write us something once in a while. But, you know, it's those two. And Howie's the big brain behind this whole thing. Mm-hmm. And he's the one who does all this vetting of candidates and really should get the credit for the, you know, by the way, you know, hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars that Blue America has raised over this past.
Actually, millions.
Millions. Well, and let me say one other thing, because there are many other PACs out there, political action committees. And the way they work, the people who run them, you know, they take administrative fees, they take consulting fees, you know, all the money does not go to the candidate, except at Blue America, all the money goes to the candidates. You guys don't take anything out. And I need to stress that because that's not mentioned often enough.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. And sometimes my lawyer yells at me and says I'm going to get in trouble because I can't keep paying for the postage myself. It has to come out of the PAC.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow. So even, you know, there's another misconception, and maybe Howie or Digby, one of you can explain, Act Blue. Act Blue is not affiliated with any candidate. Act Blue is the mechanism by which Democratic candidates get money. Can you explain how it works?
Yeah, it's a pass-through. It's kind of like when you use a credit card. It's kind of like that. So it's not Blue America. If you donate to Blue America, you do it on Act Blue,
right?
And it just passes through to the candidates. So what we prefer is that people give money directly to the candidates. That's the preference. So they go on that page you just described, mm-hmm. and they see a box and they can say, oh yeah, I want to give $20 to Diane Young. And then they just, you know, enter $20 and it goes to Diane Young. It's not like it comes to Blue America,
right,
and then we give it to Diane Young. It just goes directly through Act Blue to her bank account.
Do you know any other PAC that works like that?
I don't know. I don't pay a lot of attention to the other mm-hmm. PACs. Although the other day I saw one named Blue America. It freaked me out.
How can they do that?
Yeah, and I called my lawyer and I said, let's sue them for everything they've got. And he said, yeah, they don't have anything. So you're not going to get
hopefully
anything.
They don't have a name anymore because that's confusing. No, so you can get to Blue America through... I know through Crooks and Liars, and I know through Down with Tyranny, and Digby through digbysblog.net?
Yeah, sure, yeah. Of course. Right. And also, you can just, you know, if you just go on online anywhere, you're looking for Blue America, it'll come up. So you can find it.
You can find it. Yep. Well, I showed you one way to get there. But and so this, you know, 18 years, time flies, doesn't it? You know, I opened the show with the news that O.J. Simpson died, and remembering 30 years ago, it'll be 30 years ago in June, that slow speed chase that is so, you know, embedded in my memory because I was backstage at a Melissa Etheridge concert and they had to shoo us all out of that area to go out to the front of the house because the concert was starting. We were all watching the TV chase. 30 years ago, it's like a, you know, the blink of an eye. So 18 years you guys have been at this. And good on you. So
thank you.
Well, thanks. And I think it's been effective. I think it's had an effect on the Democratic Party and on American politics. So you know.
Let's help elect some of these candidates that are on that list today.
Definitely. So everybody, you know how to get there. Go to the Blue America page. You can, when you donate there, you can split it between all the endorsed candidates, in which case, again, the pass through is Act Blue. That's who swipes your credit card and they split it and the money goes directly to the candidates. It doesn't even come to you guys. You don't touch it.
Right, does not come to us unless people put some of that money in
to
the
Blue America
PAC, which they can do as well if they want to. Most people don't. Some people do. And when that money goes to the Blue America PAC, then we use it to buy advertising usually
Sometimes we donate it to the campaigns. Sometimes we just do advertising for a campaign that looks like they're close to winning, but just need a little bit of a push. So we'll wait till the very, very end and then give them that little push.
Right. And you've done like sandwich trucks.
That's how we paid for the, that's how we paid for the Have You Had Enough campaign.
Yep.
That Tom did. I just wanted to ask if Tom maybe wants to do another, put together another tune.
Tom?
I'd do it in a damn New York minute. I would do anything at any time. And can I leave you with a thought?
Yeah.
It's my belief that America is a great nation, and the reason is because of her progressivist strain that has been there since its founding, and has seen expression in things like democratic socialist programs. And this is where we most fulfill our promise. And it's always been with us, and we need it now more than ever. And to be even in the same room as people like Digby and Howie and you, Nicole, is a terrific honor and pleasure for me. And whatever I can do to move this cause forward and bring it more to fruition, I'm happy to do. And I've been delighted to be with each and every one of you today.
Well, we're delighted to have had you here.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right. So, Tom, challenges has been.
I better get my guitar out.
Get to work.
And then we'll premiere your song here on the show whenever you're ready.
Okay, you guys holler at me. Howie or Digby or Jackie, holler at me, and I'll start doing something in a bouncy sea.
Cool, sounds great. Howie Klein, find him at downwithtyranny.com, of course, the Blue America Pack, and Digby at digbysblog.net and salon.com, and my hat's off. Digby, of course, is the OG progressive blogger. I mean, we go, it's back to the beginning. This is where it started. So you and a handful of others, but yeah. So
And John Amato,
I'm sorry you're not here. And we'll have to, we'll get John. I'll tell you what, when Tom premieres his new song, we'll have John on as well.
We have to have Jackie stop discriminating against John.
Yes, Jackie. She's in the chat room. I see her in the chat room.
Jackie's not discriminating against John. I'm just going to make that clear.
No.
Howie's yanking her chain a little bit.
Of course.
She's teasing her.
And it's probably all my fault. And again, she probably asked John. He said, fuck no, I'm not going on her show. So, it's possible.
Hey, you know what? You can get John to appear, to play on this new song.
Oh.
I mean, he plays the sax and the flute, so maybe he could
do
a little something.
That's right.
Oh, that would be wonderful.
Yeah.
I'm down. Maybe we can get Ricky Lee to make another appearance. She was great.
Oh yeah,
she was. And maybe we can. That would be wonderful. But I love the idea of John playing his sax. That would be amazing. I've actually seen him play at a rock version of what he does, not just jazz.
I've never seen his music.
Yeah, he's really good. Yeah,
cool.
He really is good. Well, he played with Duran Duran.
I didn't know that.
Yes, he went on tour with them.
Very cool. I knew he was a musician, but that's all I knew. And again, like I said, John and I haven't spoken in years. My fault, completely my fault. But, all right, time to move on from that. Tom Maxwell, Heather Digby Parton, Howie Klein, Blue America Pack. You guys, you guys deserve a huge round of applause. I hit the wrong button. So thank you for the work you're doing. And, I say it every year, every election, but it means it more this time. This is the most important election of our lifetime. If we screw this one up where, I don't even want to think about it. So we can't. So all hands on deck time.
So definitely.
Yeah. All hands on deck. All right, you guys.
Thank you, Nicole.
Thank you, Tom. Great meeting you. Howie, Digby. We'll all talk soon. Thank you. And you guys listening, now it's your turn. Go visit the Blue America Pack and let's get some of these candidates elected. All right. With that, we're done. I'm going up to the Desert Botanical Gardens this afternoon because it's gorgeous out and the mega bloom is in bloom, and yeah, I'm going to go commune with nature. So tomorrow is Friday, Marcy Wheeler Day on the show, and it is the last day before Donald Trump goes on trial, criminal charges for fraud. I know the media likes to call it the hush money case. It's not about hush money. It's about him trying to deceive the American public days before an election. And yeah, and he broke the law and needs to be held accountable like anybody else who breaks the law. All right. So big day tomorrow with Marcy Wheeler. And with that, we're done. Thanks for listening, everybody. And peace out.